As we just heard, school is either happening or it's just around the corner. And under new guidance from the state, teachers, staff, many students, five and over, at daycare centers and after-school programs as well, all will be required to wear masks indoors. Here's Governor Charlie Baker yesterday in East Hampton giving guidance from the Board of Early Education and Care.
The youngest kids at this point in time aren't able to get vaccinated. We fully expect that at some point this fall, the rules with respect to that will change, and we'll work really hard at that point in time to help those that want to get vaccinated. But I think they're viewing that at this point in time as an appropriate measure as, you know, school starts and as people start incorporating more of those early ed programs into their daily lives. And I think it makes sense.
Vaccines, masking, Delta variant. What does back to school, back to the office mean? What COVID questions do you have? It is time for Ask the Doctors. The number, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. With us to answer your questions, we have Dr. Benjamin Linus, an infectious disease physician at Boston Medical Center, an associate professor of medicine and epidemiology at the Boston University School of Medicine. Dr. Linus, welcome back.
Oh, it's great to be here. Thanks.
And I want to welcome a new voice today, Dr. Catherine Gergen-Barnett, the Vice Chair of Primary Care Innovation and Transformation in the Department of Family Medicine at Boston Medical Center and Boston University's School of Medicine. Dr. Gergen-Barnett, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Glad to have you. Dr. Linus, kids, schools, what is your number one message to parents about the physical health and safety of their kids who are in schools today or getting ready to go back?
Sure, I think that's a great question. I think we all have it. I have kids who went to school today as well, and I understand the anxieties. But I think the message that I would want to give to everybody is that we are not in the same place that we were this time last year. We've learned a lot about SARS-CoV-2, the virus, and about COVID-19, the disease. And I know there's a lot of anxiety around Delta, but Delta does not take us back to the very beginning. We know that we can mitigate this disease. We had a good experience last year with return to school. We have a statewide mandate for masking, which I think is fantastic. We're working really hard, and it's incredibly important to keep vaccinating. But with good mitigation in place and with people being vaccinated, I think it's absolutely a year to send our kids to school. And I've been saying that I think that this year our role models or our model should effectively be a normal year of school, and we're going to hang as much mitigation as we possibly can around that, as opposed to last year. Oh, go ahead.
Well, if you don't mind me asking, I mean, we just did a whole thing on back to school. You sent your kids back today. How did that feel?
It felt exciting. Of course, I had a little bit of nerves, as any parent would, but I will say I sent them to school in their masks, and I came back and started doing my work, and I looked forward to them coming home, but I really, honestly, I'm not losing sleep about my kids' safety at school this year. I really sleep pretty soundly knowing that the school is well mitigated. My children are wearing masks, and we can do this. Education's really, really, really important. And so instead of saying this, you know, last year we said we're going to put all the mitigation in place and then we're going to figure out where around that we can put in the education. This year, I think we need to put the education in place and figure out where around that we can place the mitigation. And we can, and we will. It's not to say that we can ignore this, where we know that, especially with Delta, if you pretend that it's not there, it's a big problem. But that doesn't mean that it's impossible to go to school and be safe. And I really want parents to feel comfortable that if they're following the mitigation policies at their schools, that their kids can get a good education this year and that it's going to be okay.
So, Dr. Gergen-Barnett, I was going to turn to you about masks, but instead I am going to throw you right into the deep end with a caller because we have a caller who wants you to talk a little bit more about masks. So 800-423-8255, let's pick up Megan. Megan's in Marston's Mills. Megan, go ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I just was wondering if you could expound upon the importance of masks in schools. I know many parents are concerned about the mental health effects, but my son is a post-liver transplant child, and his health literally depends on the others following the recommendations for public health guidelines. So I was just hoping that maybe you could underscore that importance just for following that one simple recommendation.
Dr. Gergen-Barnett, did you have a response for Megan?
Absolutely. Thank you, Megan, for your call. And you know, grateful, again, similar to what Dr. Linus said, that the governor, you know, last week really came out and made masks mandatory in school, in part because we have learned, as he also shared, so much about the virus in the last 18 months, and the fact that it is aerosolized and it passed through air particles. And the mask is one of the most essential elements we can have in protecting ourselves and protecting our children, alongside ventilation and hand washing and regular testing. So having everybody around your child being masked and having the teachers vaccinated, and again, the monies that have come in from the American Rescue Plan and the CDC for regular testing as well, all of these things will protect your child and all of our children. And similar to Dr. Linus, I have three children that are in various stages of going to school and just so grateful.
And do we feel, especially I'm thinking about kids under the age of 12 who are not yet able to get vaccinated. We are aware, I talked to Dr. Ashish Jha here on the show on Monday about the fact that transmission from the Delta variant does seem to be higher among kids. Is that mask the thing? Is it enough that we feel infection rates in schools will stay relatively stable? Do you understand my question, Dr. Kirgan-Barnett?
Yes, absolutely. So similar to, I think, what Dr. Jha said on Monday, that the masks are absolutely critical, but we need to think about risk to exposure as a cumulative risk. So masks are a critical part of it, but we also need to be making sure that everybody who is in that child's life who is not able, that child's not able to get vaccinated, everybody who's able to get vaccinated needs to be vaccinated, because that also is going to be a critical factor in protecting our children younger than 12.
You are listening to Ask the Doctors on Radio Boston. The number to ask your booster, Delta variant, vaccine, mask, back to school, hospitalization question, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Dr. Linus, I'm going to turn back to you, and I'm going to ask about hospitalizations. They are up in Massachusetts, and the percentage of breakthrough cases continues to climb. That now makes up about a third of the state's overall cases. Breakthrough cases account for about a quarter of current hospitalizations. Now, I want to acknowledge, I get it, that when the denominator, right, when the baseline, when more and more people are vaccinated, then you're going to see more of the cases among the vaccinated. And still, you can imagine that those numbers make people's antenna go up. So explain to us how to interpret those data trends among the vaccinated that I just laid out.
Sure. So the important thing, I think, to really look at and what people really want to know when they're thinking about vaccine is the relative rate of hospitalization if they're vaccinated versus not vaccinated, right? And the overall counts can be deceptive. And I don't want to do the arithmetic on live air, but you can imagine, right, if a quarter of the cases in the hospital are amongst vaccinated people, that means, and the vaccination rate in our community is, call it 75% in general, then that means that 25% of the population is getting 75% of the admissions, right? Which means that it's a much higher rate of hospitalization amongst the unvaccinated than amongst the vaccinated. It's just that as we do a better and better job of vaccinating the population, right, the cases that come in start to be breakthrough cases amongst vaccinated people. But the denominator, how many people out there are vaccinated, is much larger than the unvaccinated. And so actually what you really care about is, what's my risk today compared to what it would have been if I had not been vaccinated? And that's the best measure. And when you look at it that way, there's a large reduction, a 4-fold or 5-fold reduction in hospitalization rates amongst people who are vaccinated. So nothing is perfect. There is no absolute safety in any pandemic. But, people should go forward feeling comfortable that even with Delta, it's outstanding protection against COVID-19, the disease, the hospitalization and the bad outcomes.
And I do want to underscore, according to the Department of Public Health from yesterday, 0.01% of the vaccinated are hospitalized, 0.43% have been infected at all after vaccination. So we are still talking about very small numbers. I'm going to go back to the phones here, 1-800-423-8255 for Ask the Doctors. We've got Alicia on the line in Roslindale. Alicia, go ahead.
Hi there. So I am a teacher in Cambridge Public Schools, and
we are going back to school next week, and we were just actually at school today with a bunch of teachers in the building. And my question is around masks. Obviously, we're all going to be wearing masks indoors with our students. But I think a lot of people feel like it's safe for when the students leave the classroom, even if they've just been in there, for teachers to take off their mask and have a little mask break if there's no other people around. And just because COVID is an airborne spread disease, I'm just wondering if that is actually safe to take for the teachers to take off their masks if the students aren't currently in the room with them.
Dr. Gergen-Barnett, I know this is a tricky one, and I know you can't provide specific medical advice to specific individuals, but you have a general thought for Alicia here.
Yeah, Alicia, thank you for your call, and thank you for the work you do in teaching our students. So I would say that just as you indicated, we know that COVID-19 lives in airborne particles. We also know that if somebody is infected, it can stay in the air for some time. Obviously, masks are really going to mitigate the risk of somebody have, if they have COVID-19, for those particles to be in the air. That being said, you know, I think probably best to not stay in the classroom and take your mask off directly after the students leave. I think stepping out, you know, getting a breath of fresh air is always the best way to take a mask break. We all need mask break occasionally, but I think probably not staying in that same contained classroom is the best way to go.
1-800-423-8255 to ask your coronavirus question of Ask the Doctors. My turn first, though, and I'm going to ask, I want to do kind of a rapid round about vaccines, and I'm going to ask you a question about each vaccine. So, Dr. Linus, let's start with Pfizer, which is now fully approved for people ages 16 plus. What are we seeing for off-label uses? So once a medication is approved by the FDA, doctors are able to prescribe it for off-label purposes. WBUR's Martha Biebinger has been reporting on people who are now, for example, looking to get shots for their children who are under 12 as an off-label use, since children under 12 are not eligible. What do we know about off-label use?
So I've heard those stories as well. I don't have data about all the off-label use. I think probably because some of that is kind of gray space use where maybe there's not being great data kept. Yeah, it's hard for me to go on air and encourage people to use an unapproved vaccine for their underage children. I understand the anxiety. I'm very much looking forward to having my 11-year-old vaccinated, but I don't think it's the right thing to do right now to bend that and get your kid vaccinated before the vaccine's been approved to that age group. I think we're all pretty confident this will be approved in the fall, but at the same time, that's why we do the research, right? The same thing that's making people want to get their kid vaccinated, right, wanting to protect your children, there is the outside chance that perhaps there is a safety signal here that we haven't seen yet. And so that's why we do the work, and that's why we have the regs. And I would wait until it's approved. It's not going to be that much longer.
Okay, so that was the Pfizer question. Now, Dr. Gergen-Barnett on Moderna, still not fully approved, authorized for emergency use. But a new study published in the Journal of the American Medical Association, my understanding is that that study has not yet been peer-reviewed, shows that antibody levels were twice as high in those who got Moderna versus Pfizer. Help us understand what that might mean. How should we think about it? Yes, the levels are higher. Does that matter? Is twice as good? How do we think about that?
Yeah. So I think the most important thing for all of us to be looking at is what is the outcome of these vaccines. So Pfizer and Moderna are still really neck and neck in terms of looking at the most important outcomes, which is reducing the risk of hospitalization and death. And so I think it's really tempting to kind of take some of these data points and say, one is better than the other because my antibodies are higher. We don't know how quickly those antibodies decline and then even out to be the same pace. So fundamentally, both of them are excellent and should be really used. Again, this idea of whatever's offered, you take it. I just want to circle back very briefly to Dr. Linus's point around the Pfizer, which is also that there may be that there's data that comes out that children at 11, 10 years old need a smaller dose of the vaccine. So it's not just the safety, but it's actually thinking about what is going to be administered and not wanting to jump the gun on that.
Okay, I do hope to get to a couple more on this, but we do this for listeners, and Rachel is on the line from Brookline. So let's take Rachel's question here. Rachel, go ahead.
Hi, yes. I sent my third grader off to school today, and my question is, with all this data we're monitoring and everything, when do you start to get concerned? I mean, what is the point at which the community spread or the rates or that is creeping up there, and I should start rethinking, you know, his attendance in school because until maybe he's vaccinated or homeschooling, and what's the pivot point?
Dr. Linus.
So I would say that one thing that we learned last year, you might not like this answer, and I too live in Brookline, I'm involved with the Brookline School, so we've talked a lot about this, that we learned last year there isn't actually, it's unwise probably to anchor all your decision-making on a community threshold that would make you start to think twice. Certainly, as rates go up in the community, it might be worth reexamining the schools and thinking about it. But last year, for example, we had, even while we had pretty high community-based transmission, we had effectively no transmission in school. In fact, literally, I think no documented cases transmitted in the schools of Brookline Public Schools. So, you know, to reflexively react to community levels is probably what I would say oversensitive, right? It's overreacting, and it might result in kids losing educational opportunities that would be safe and very important. So I think it's important that we're watching what's happening in our schools. And clearly if we're starting to see clusters in school, then I think we need to reconsider. But I wouldn't anchor all of your decisioning just on community rates because, again, what you're concerned about is transmission in the building, and that's what we need to keep an eye on.
Okay, and lightning fast, Allison in Franklin. Hi, Allison. Can you ask your question quickly?
Yes. What changed from the public being told for months and months to wear a mask to protect others, but then that changed, and now we are told to wear a mask to protect others, but also to protect ourselves? What changed?
Thanks for that. Dr. Gergen-Barnett.
Allison, thank you so much for your call. So This kind of change in communication around what a mask does is actually, it's not so recent. It's really been, again, based on data of understanding what are the cornerstones to keep us healthy. And the more kind of data we were able to collect over a period of months comparing those people who wear masks versus those who don't, and the number of lives that have been saved by wearing a mask, both the person who's wearing it and the people in the community, is what led us to understand that a mask is protective both ways. And frankly, I think, you know, it's a really important message for people to understand so that we can all be protecting each other, but, you know, again, thinking about our own health as well.
All right, Dr. Linus, maybe in, you know, just a few sentences, what is your take on where we are in the arc of Delta right now?
I don't know. No, I think, I mean, honestly, I think that no one really knows. We all hope that we're seeing a plateau and hopefully we're coming over the peak and heading downward. And there's some model data that I was looking at recently that suggests that what we might be seeing is sort of a long plateau phase followed by a decrease. But again, it's tea leaf reading. If anyone tells you they know for sure, look at them suspiciously because I don't think anyone really knows.
All right. Okay. I love
can
that kind of answer.
Happen there. Yeah.
Super fast. We have 20 seconds.
Oh, I will say I agree. I don't know. But if you look at modeling around the world, it says two and a half months. And we're right in that period. So we can be cautiously optimistic.
Well, we'll all cross our fingers. That was Dr. Catherine Gergen-Barnett, new entrant for us from Boston University School of Medicine, and Dr. Benjamin Linus, also from the Boston University School of Medicine. We sure appreciate both of you. Thanks.
Thank you.
Happy to be here. Take care. Go BU.
There you go.